Hour number three of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And, Jimmy, we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to welcome back to the program a regular analyst.
Well, we're really pleased to be joined by Mark Pankratz, a former staffer at the University of Tennessee. He was on some great teams led by Bruce Pearl. Does a terrific job as a basketball analyst, and that is Mark Pankratz. Mark, how are you?
I am doing great, guys. It's so exciting to be back with y'all. It's getting closer to basketball, which, man, just brings a smile to my face.
Well, I'm ready to get started to watch this Tennessee team. They have added UT Martin to play December the 9th, so now they have five non-conference games to my count at this point before the SEC season starts. Your thoughts on trying to get that game under your belt and how important it is for this team to try to get in several more non-conference games before SEC play starts?
Well, I think, for one, I think it's important for all of our psyche. I'd love to just see this team with all the talent they're bringing and to see some goodness going on and watching Tennessee basketball this year. But for the development of this team with all these young guys and trying to figure out the right rotations, I think we know there's going to be there's a handful of guys that are going to play and going to play a lot of minutes with Fulkerson and Pons and but I think figuring out your point guard position, figuring out who is going to be your five, and then these games versus the UT Martins, there's guys on this roster that could probably play some decent minutes for other teams in the league that may not get a lot of minutes once you get in the league play. And so giving some of those players a chance to play, 10, 15, 20 minutes to get some minutes and some game action under their belt is huge for their psyche moving forward into the season, because it's been a long, long off season for all of us, for those guys on the court as well. Excited to see this team start to merge together. And you look for them, and you talk to these coaches, they've not had – a lot of five-on-five, full-team interaction. And so it might be the first time that they actually play together will be in that game versus UT Martin. So there's going to be a lot of learning being done on the court.
And with so many unknowns out there, Mark, I would think this is a good year to have a lot of quality depth, which I think Tennessee has.
Absolutely. And being able to play different looking lineups. And what I mean by that is they can go small. They can go Bailey at the point guard, or Vescovi at the point guard, or put Vescovi over to two, or put Springer over at the two, or James at the two or the three. And so then that can push down Keon to the three and Pons to a four and Fulkerson to a five. And now you're at a smaller lineup or go big, and you've got whether it's Anisiki at the five, Fulkerson, there's just so many options out there, which makes this team intriguing. And the opportunity to where if you go play a South Carolina that's big, or Kentucky with their transfer in Sar that's a 7-footer, to where you got to play a little bit bigger, or you go up against a team like Florida that's going to be a little bit smaller this year. There's options there to counter whatever team and the opponent puts on the floor.
Mark, always great to talk to you. Glad to catch up once again. And tell me, if we had told you, we'll just say 2 years ago, that, hey, John Fulkerson and E. Pons, depending on which outlet you're looking at, are going to be first team all-SEC going into a year in which Tennessee is picked to win the Southeastern Conference. Any idea what that reaction might have been a couple of years ago?
You're crazy. when you look at it, Houston Fancher, which, former Tennessee assistant, head coach at Appy State, now with the NC State women's team, who's top 10 in the country, he at the time was with Charlotte. And that's who Tennessee beat out. Charlotte Fancher was the lead on that recruiting, and Tennessee beat out Charlotte. And really, in some close inner circles, there's a lot of people that wanted him to go to Charlotte because they thought that he would play more. But grew up bleeding orange and obviously chose Tennessee. And, people thought that he wouldn't amount to much of anything. And I even remember, watching him play a couple years ago against North Carolina and just got really out-rebounded, pushed around. And I was like, gosh, is he, you know, is he at the right level? And here he is, you know, people talking about he's going to be an NBA player. Like you said, John, preseason, potentially all first team SEC. And same thing with Pons, you know, can the kid dribble? Can't shoot. You know, what position is he going to play? Super athletic, but, you know, we've seen guys like that that don't amount to much of whether it's in my time, it's, you know, they were really athletic and had some ability. You know, Stanley Asumnu, Emmanuel Negadu, you know, the list goes on of just really athletic guys that didn't develop much beyond that. Pons is just, gosh, he's a difference maker on both ends of the floor. And so, no, John, I would have said you were crazy. I'm thankful to be wrong because they've just bought into the Barnes system, and it's shown time and time again that he gets guys better. And those are two additional case studies that we're thankful to be wearing orange and white this year.
Having been around it as long as you have, followed it for as long as you have, and, of course, you used to play, it's one thing to wind up at a program where the coaching staff is outstanding in developing players, but when it comes to the development that we've seen with E. Pons, the progress he's made as an offensive contributor, of course, defensive player of the year last year in the conference, John Fulkerson, of course, all conference with how well he played down the stretch, especially over the second half of the SEC schedule, how vital is to the equation is the hard work that Fulkerson and Pons have put in to benefit from the development at the hands of Barnes and his staff?
Well, I think it starts with Barnes. It starts with the culture that he's built. And, you know, we go back, we've all heard the stories, we've talked about him to where, you know, he's never in his office and he's always in the practice facility. And there's a difference when a student manager or student assistant is rebounding for a guy as opposed to a Hall of Fame coach. And if your Hall of Fame coach is willing to be in the gym working with you, that puts a different type of expectation on getting your butt in the gym. And Barnes has done that. He was blessed to have, you know, the Kevin Punter, Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield. You know, Admiral was a guy that he didn't recruit, remember. That was Donnie Tindall in his brief time here. He recruited him, but they bought into that work ethic piece. Maybe it's because they had to, because they were a two-star, three-star guy, and they were being told that, look, you're not going to amount to anything, and so they had that inner drive within them. But Barnes has built that because he's willing to spend the time with him and, you know, being a part of different programs, talking to other coaches around the country, that's rare. Those guys usually are the ones, whether it was Pearl doing out, doing more community events, being around, moving and shaking, they weren't in the gym as much as Barnes is with his players. And I think that's why you've seen the continued development of his roster, because he's willing to spend the time with them.
I wanted to ask you, Mark, about this. Keon Johnson was asked, who is the hardest guy for you to defend? Johnson comes in as a reputation of being a tremendous defensive player. He said Santiago Vescovi. What are your expectations for Vescovi this year?
Well, you know, my expectations for him are less than what is being expected of or being talked about with him, because I think he was a shot in the arm. He was an electrifying player because he was just different. It was a cool story. He could shoot. He had the fancy kind of no-look passes. But on the flip side of that, I mean, I think there's more competition. Springer there. Bailey's now eligible. And I'm interested to see, has he gotten better defensively? Has he gotten better at being able to get past guys off the dribble? Because now defenses know, look, hey, I'm going to crowd him, and can he get by me? You know, it's interesting to hear Keon say the challenges of guarding him. I think some of that is that European uniqueness about his game. He's not fast. Which Keon is used to playing against guys at the AAU circuit or in high school that typically play at one speed. A difference of the European game is they are taught to play at different speeds. And when you can, by doing that, you keep guys off balance. And that's a maturity factor of a basketball player that I think Keon is learning and learning through playing against guys like Vescovi. So my expectations are lower of Vescovi, not because I think he's going to be lesser of a player. He'll probably be better, but I think more competition, so which could eat into some of his minutes. And I think some of it has to do with expectations are high for him. And so, I don't expect him to meet those higher expectations.
What do you expect from A.J. Anasicki?
I expect a rebounder. And the reason why I expect a rebounder is because if I'm Barnes, and look, I'm no Hall of Famer coach. I got out of coaching because of I didn't want to go down that route anymore, but I'm no Hall of Fame coach. But if I'm Barnes, it's, man, you got to be an animal on the boards. Because if you look at one of the weaknesses of this team last year, it was rebounding. Yeah. If you look at one of the weaknesses of Fulkerson, in my opinion, it's his ability to rebound at a high level. And with the way that this game is changing with more three-point shots, that we need to be able to rebound. Now, the advantages of guys like Keon, guys like Pons, guys like James, Josiah James, they're even Vescovi, they're really good rebounders for their position. But I think Anasicki's got to be a guy that can shore up the inside from a rebounding standpoint. And so I think that's something that he can add value, and he's shown to be able to do it previously at his previous stops. And so I expect him to be a major contributor.
Our guest, Mark Pankratz, as we talk hoops with him. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Another segment with Mark coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of The Sports Animal.
I got a wife, kids. Do I sound like a happy guy to you, Frankie?
We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Mark Pankratz, as he joins us for another segment here. And, Jimmy, for those that might have missed, the Volunteers have actually got a game back on the schedule as they added an opponent earlier today.
They added UT Martin. That game is going to be December the 9th, so that'll be the season opener. Tennessee still looking to try to add more opponents. The next game after that is scheduled to be December the 12th, hosting Cincinnati. Kentucky always a team to look out for, but I'm hearing that maybe some of their freshmen and maybe even Oliver Saar might not be quite as good as some people thought. Richmond beat Kentucky earlier. Your thoughts on Kentucky and the Wildcats challenging Tennessee for SEC supremacy?
Well, it's interesting. I think you talk about the teams that this hurts and you know, not being able to have the same preseason, the same workout schedule, not only now but in the summer. I think it hurts teams like Kentucky, you know, teams that are revamping their roster. I think Kentucky is going to be really talented. They always are. But I think it's going to be a challenge because they're not going to be getting as many reps under their belt, not just in games but also in practices. Look, Kentucky's still going to be there. They're going to be in one of the top three or four teams in the league. But I think it hurts a team like that. You know, you look at Auburn. You know, they lost a ton, and they lost against obviously the best team in the country currently with Gonzaga, but they also lost to Central Florida. I think teams. I've been surprised. I thought South Carolina would get off to a better start. They've lost two games already to Tulsa and Liberty, but I think those experienced teams, you know, I think Missouri is a team that could be pretty good because they just bring so much back. You know, LSU is another team that everybody talks about that's continued to be there. But Kentucky's going to be there. They always are. But I don't think this is one of those Kentucky teams that is a national championship contender like they typically are in that conversation early in the year.
We heard Rick Pitino say that he thought the season should be delayed and then they should have May Madness. Other coaches jumped on board. Do you think they should have started college basketball later? Or are you fine with them starting it now to try to get in as many games as you can because there's no assurance that things are going to be better in January, February, or March?
Yeah, I understand where Pitino's coming from, and it sounds good on the surface of just push it back. But, we got to move forward, and, we can do that with some precautionary steps that we can talk about. But I think if you push it back, if you push back the time, what is the difference? And then can you really have a May Madness? If you're starting your season in January, how much different is it? Now we're coming off of Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays where people are getting together, and so now you're maybe the cases are even higher, and so and then you're affecting NBA draft schedules. You're affecting the college schedule of when kids are in classes. It would just be really, really hard. I think, doing what they've done is a smart decision. I don't quite honestly understand why play the UT Martins of the world. Financially, do they have the ability to do the same level of testing, same level of precautionary steps? I don't understand why travel across the country. There's enough teams in a region to where you can make some steps necessary to just limit the risk. So I think those are some things that we could be doing as opposed to just pushing the season back and creating a May Madness. Because at the end of the day, the NCAA, to survive, they got to make this happen. And so they're going to have an NCAA tournament come somehow, some way. I just think pushing it back is there's too many moving parts to make that happen successfully.
Do you think that they could just gather all 68 teams in one spot, as they've talked about potentially in Indianapolis, to make sure that it plays out?
I don't 68 teams and socially distancing and hotels and all that stuff. I mean, I don't, even like they're calling this Bubbleville that they've got going on. Is it really Bubbleville anymore if you've got teams moving in and out of, they coming to play in the bubble? I don't know how you do it. I think you just have to have an open mind, knowing that there's going to be some players that can't play. There's going to be some teams that have to be moved in and moved out. And that's just the time that we're in. It's unfortunate. But I don't see how, at this rate, if you have a March Madness, an April Madness, a May Madness, that you're not still going to have some of this stuff going on with or without the vaccine. Because if that comes out, if medical personnel, which they should, I'm so thankful for all their sacrifice that they're doing right now for our communities. But if they're getting the vaccine first, at what point do the student athletes get it? And if they do decide to do it, I don't know, John. I don't know how it works out, other than I think people just have to be willing to be super flexible and plan for the best.
Well, and as we've seen with what the Pac-12 and Big Ten have encountered in waiting so long to start their seasons, it looks like the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC, Mark, gave themselves wiggle room, which is you almost have to have, knowing that at some point the schedule is going to change some way, shape, or form, as we've already seen for some programs.
Yeah, one of the things that I hope comes out of this change is football and basketball scheduling. When I was over there on the basketball side, I mean, you're scheduling so not nearly as far in advance as football, but it's interesting how all of a sudden when you need to get a game, how quickly a game can happen. You know, so hopefully they can find some ways to get the appropriate amount of games on the calendar with the appropriate precautionary steps taken. And we just have a fun, enjoyable basketball season because this is a really good SEC conference this year. There's a lot of talent that came back. People talk about last year's draft class was pretty weak compared to this one. And so I just hope that Tennessee fans get the chance to watch all this talent on here because, you know, one of the unfortunate parts about losing games, yes, figuring out rotations, yes, all that other stuff, but you know, you're only going to have so many games with not only Fulkerson and Pons, but even Keon and some of these other talented players on here. So I just hope that we get a chance to watch as much Tennessee basketball as possible.
Hey, Mark, we really appreciate it. We always look forward when we get to spend time with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Same to you guys. Stay safe out there, everybody, and God bless.
Thanks,
all right,
Mark.
Thank you. Mark Pankratz joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.